Welcome to the Optional Podcast, episode number 220 for the week of August 9th, 2021. The Optional Podcast is a show all about video games and how they connect to the world around us, recorded each week from New York City and bounce around cables and satellites all around the world, and right into your listening device of choice. As always, I'm Paul Tamayo, and I'm joined by the one and only Cam Brewster.
Hey, we back.
How's it going?
I'm great.
Nice.
I'm feeling good. I just got news about my move.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. As if anybody is wondering, I'm moving to the West Coast. So that's crazy. But we'll get back to that.
Yeah, actually, yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit, because maybe we'll get some advice from someone who used to live there. And speaking of which, this week we are joined by the illustrious editor-in-chief at fanbyte.com. One Danielle Riendo. Danielle, how's it going?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Thank y'all for having me, because I don't know if you knew this, but I've been a big fan of the Optional for a very long time.
Man, so
I'm actually nuts. Like fangirling a little. I'm like, hey guys, how are you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm getting that tatted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay, we got that, right? We got that on. You definitely got it on the backup record. Okay. Just want to double check.
It's all the truth, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's yeah. Likewise, I kind of joked about it on the, okay. Yeah. Jay just confirmed for me in the Discord. Appreciate it. I had talked about it a while ago, but I first met you at like a Labo event, and I was like, because you know, I was there with Stephen Totilo, and he's just like, you know, he knows everyone, he's shaking everybody's hand, and then like you're there, and I'm like, and I'm like, I'm a fan, so I was like, I walked over and was like, hey, hi, my name's Paul. I had my camera over my shoulder and everything.
It was
great.
But
yeah, it's surreal to have you on our show. Honestly, this is like
we made it move.
It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know about that, but thank you all so much for having me.
You gotta have like an ex-president on or something like that. Yeah. That's the only way.
My secret service is in the other room. You know, he's a Chihuahua mix and he's very loud. So
yes. Oh, I should also mention recent competition winner.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I won.
Let's go.
Yeah. I won at least one of my brackets. I did not win the other one. A very funny thing happened in the other one where I so I do submission grappling. It's like the side of MMA that is all the ground fighting and takedowns and wrestling and stuff. There's no punching or kicking, but there is a lot of like joint locks and choking, and you choke people out and all sorts of stuff. So it's pretty violent still. I won the bantamweight women's blue belt gi division. So that's a fucky pajamas. Whoa. So I did win. I won both my matches there. And then in no gi, which I'm like way better in no gi. That's just, you wear kind of normal clothes, like a rash guard and like board shorts. And I ended up going really far, but I passed out to a choke and accidentally forfeited by walking off the mat because I thought I lost, even though I didn't lose. So I'm kicking myself. I didn't realize it until like 20 minutes later when somebody was explaining it to me, because I was still like, well, I just woke up. Yeah, I was supposed to go a fourth overtime round, but I completely was just like, oh, I passed out, so I guess I lost. And it's like, no, I didn't lose.
But did you say fourth overtime round?
Yeah, fourth overtime round. It went far. I was a little tired that day. I got home and like, it was like, oh my God, you know, I had to make weight and everything. So, you know, I'd been dieting and like nothing crazy, just, you know, just dieting and exercising. And then like that night I was like, pizza. And I had like victory pizza. I had ice cream. I had chocolate. I was just sitting there watching like Great British Bake Off, just stuffing chocolate in my face. Like, oh yeah. Oh, that's just a beautiful Genoese sponge. Oh, that's right, Paul. Like it was,
oh my God.
It was a little ridiculous, but it
gorgeous.
Was gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous. Oh. Handshake myself, you know.
I am, you know, cheers. I'm going to drop several flex bombs.
I'm so impressed by that. That's so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally like on two episodes ago, I think, talking about how I got sweaty in go-karts, and I was like, yeah, I can't do this anymore. That's too much. That's too much for me. So salute to you.
Thank you.
Oh, and real quick before we get into the rest of the show, I do have to take 5 minutes because we do have 3 F1 fans on the podcast now.
Oh my God.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
Yes.
The Hungarian Grand Prix that just happened this past weekend, right before the summer break. Now this is a summer break and I'm going to be sad for like 3 or 4 weekends in a row. I think that's how long it is. That's how long it is. At least it is in my head. But what are some of your takeaways from the Hungarian Grand Prix? Because it was a wild race, probably the wildest one of the year so far.
Oh my God. Yes. It almost felt like that reverse grid thing that they keep talking about every now and then of like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if it was like, okay, the back markers start. It's kind of what happened because it was like bumper cars at the very first turn. And it was absolutely wild. Like, four cars, I think, were totally out. And then Esteban Ocon, who I don't think he's had one podium, I think, or one or two, but not that many in his entire career in F1. And famously, you know, had to sit out a season and everything because he didn't, you know, quite have the money bags kind of attachment and everything like that. Back in it, last year wasn't too great for him. And then this year it was like, oh my God, it's his chance. And it was wild. I was so excited. I was watching it as I kind of always do on the Sunday morning. I always kind of catch it as it, you know, wherever it is when I wake up. And then I'm just like, oh my God, what? Like, I didn't see the start at first. I was just, you know, reacting to what was happening in the moment as I woke up, you know, an hour into the race or whatever it was, like flipping out. Wild.
It was absolutely wild. I mean, like, lap one. So me and Cam, we were down in Maryland for a friend's little baby shower.
Nice.
And so we had spent a night in the hotel, and we were watching it in the hotel room because I was like, oh yeah, it's on ESPN. So I was like, oh cool. I was about to pay for like the Wi-Fi to watch it on like my F1 subscription, but I was like, oh wait, ESPN. And I, you know, I was like quietly watching it because you still sleep. And but then eventually we watched the rest of the race, and Cam, I want to know like, what did you think of that as like, I'm assuming your first like real.
Yeah, like, it was race? Actually my first like full race. Well, kind of full. All right. So like, this is my experience. So I like wake up to you like changing channels, and I'm like hungover as fuck. I'm like, what the hell is going on? What are you doing? And you're like trying to find the match or the race, and you're like, I'm putting this on, and you like turn it down like the volume to like where we can't hear really anything. Yeah, and I was like, turn it up, man. Like, I'm already hungover. It's like, it doesn't matter. And like immediately crash, like 40 cars were flipping in there. Well, at least that's how I remember it. Right? Yeah. And it was crazy. Like, I was like at full attention, and then I guess they straightened everything out, and then it was like the race as usual. So like, I kind of like fell asleep and then woke up for the last like like 20 laps, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. And we were like cheering everybody on. I was like, who's that? Which one is that? That suit is cool. That car is shiny. Like, I was, Paul's explaining everything and all who's who. And I know some of the names, like from listening to other people talk about it and other podcasts and stuff, but I don't keep up with it. So it was absolutely incredible. And like seeing the guy who won and his story, and that's just the coolest thing ever. I didn't really realize it was like a full-on, like, you get a trophy. Yeah. And, you know, there's a podium situation. That's so, it was dope. It was champagne bottles the size of my body. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. And we had like veteran drivers like Fernando Alonso, who used to be teammates with Lewis Hamilton, like defending against him. And
yeah, it was like drama going on.
Sebastian Vettel, who got second, he was disqualified after the race, after everything was said and done, because the FIA couldn't successfully take like the required amount of fuel to test it afterwards. Per regulation. Yeah, it was like some weird. That's the part of like the sport where you're like, oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
But in my heart, Sepp got second place. Yeah. And yeah.
Wait, so who does the fourth place get third place?
Yeah. So everybody moved up. So Hamilton got second, and then Carlos Sainz got bronze, third.
Wow.
It was a bummer, but shout out to Seb for also rocking the rainbow mask and the shirt, which I think he got fined for, or he got a penalty for, because like, not supposed to wear it during the like Hungarian anthem again, per regulation or whatever. Oh, but
God,
whatever. Seb's a real one.
He's honestly like, I never. If you told me like a couple of years ago that he was gonna be like, you know, kind of the white guy who didn't suck out of the out of the Formula One dudes, like I would have just been like, really? Like Sebastian Vettel? But like he's like really, really, really gone for stuff and like what he believes in, and it's kind of awesome to see, honestly.
Do y'all see the sport like changing in a way like that? Like being more open to like, I don't know, like them wearing whatever they want, and I don't know. Does that seem like it's on the radar at all?
I think so in some ways. I mean, there has been some weird sort of like, I mean, it's to be expected. Like a lot of the racers are like younger white men, and some of them obviously from different countries. So like there's a lot of different bubbles that they're coming from, especially like just being rich. That's just like one bubble that's hard to kind of see outside of. So there have been some weird instances of like Charles Leclerc, I believe, I forget who was exactly who said it in our motorsports channel, which I made this past summer or something. That some of them were reacting kind of weird to like some of the stuff that Lewis Hamilton was trying to do during last summer's protests and stuff. And yeah, just some folks have said, you know, kind of off, just really out of touch comments that they're not really fully aware of everything, but I do see it changing a little bit. Danielle, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lewis being the best talent in like the generation, like I know he's in a battle right now with Max Verstappen. I know there's a whole thing with that, but I think just the fact that he is so good, he is like the generational talent, and he is an outspoken person, and he does, you know, talk about what he believes in, and he's also like into fashion and into like he's into environmentalism. He's into a lot of things. He's into a lot of causes, and he's like an outspoken and really incredible person that I just truly hope that creates a path for more people and more like folks of color in the sport to feel like they can, you know, speak their mind a little bit and things like that. I mean, it's such a weird sport, and I've only gotten into it in the last 2 years myself. Like probably last year was the first year I actually watched every race. Before that, I kind of got into it because my friend Rob Zachney, who I used to work with, like has a Formula One podcast. So I would like listen here and there. And I, you know, of course watched Drive to Survive when that came out and became, you know, interested in it. But it is weird. So I guess my context for it, I've only been a fan in the Lewis Hamilton era. So I'm kind of like, why isn't it better? And it's kind of like, well, he is kind of like this kind of generational, you know, absolute star talent that it's unprecedented. The amount of winning he's done is he breaks like records every other race, basically. So I'm just hoping that creates a precedent in some extent.
Yeah, me too. For sure.
I find it absolutely fascinating. I totally get why y'all are into it. Like I go crazy over that stuff.
Let's go.
I was calling shots. Yes! It was great.
Yeah, Ken was calling shots and everything. Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I my fascination with the sport started in January. So like, I have been completely, it's just completely taken over my life, and I'm like buying magazines now. Like I buy like Grand Prix Racing magazine, and I read all the blogs and stuff. But yeah, I also listen to Shift F1. Shout out to Rob Zachney and the crew over there. They do excellent work every week. It's going to become a lifetime thing for me for sure.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to, hopefully if things are still going well, we'll see, but in October, get a chance to see it live in person in Austin.
Oh my God. Yes. That'll be amazing.
Yeah. I will report back, but, let's jump right into things. So this week's theme is sort of one that like I've been thinking about for a while now, and just sort of like revisiting older gems that either you've played before or you've, you know, maybe you've seen or read before that you've been wanting to revisit and sort of like reassess, reevaluate, but they still kind of have some weird parts to it that are kind of hard to get over. And so Danielle, since you're our guest, and also since I've been playing the same game, you put down Skyward Sword, which is like such an interesting little example of like this exact thing, because You've talked about it on Channel F, fanbyte.com/podcast or podcastnet.org if you're nasty. And we've talked about it you've talked about it in terms of, your struggle and your journey in revisiting this game. Tell us about that and how that's been going so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to do like the quickest recap, I got the game, I was really excited to play it because I played it 10 years ago. I actually reviewed it, even though I wasn't able to completely complete it because just the motion controls never fully worked. But I got really far in the game and, kind of played enough to say like, hey, this is what a cool game. I'm just having a really hard time controlling it, et cetera, et cetera. And I was really pumped to play it again because I remembered, even though I had a hard time with the controls, I loved the game design. I actually thought it was a really, really cool sort of mix of ideas. This game has really, really nice interaction between like the overworld areas and the sort of the Zelda dungeons. It has some interesting crafting. It's pretty light. Like, it's not like wildly deep.
Like Monster Hunter.
Right. Yeah. Not by any means. It's not even nearly as deep as it is in Breath of the Wild, but it has a lot of these cool ideas. And it actually has like a really pretty, interesting overworld where, instead of sailing, as in Wind Waker, it's like, oh, it's like everything's floating and you kind of fly on these weird birds. It's just kind of a cool, interesting game that I've always wanted to complete. And so I started playing it and, oh my God, it was like Struggle City, just trying to get through the first area. It controls like hot garbage, even with the button controls. And I have a messed up wrist. It's why I had to stop boxing, actually. So that's why I do grappling now instead of boxing. But I like can't do motion controls anymore. It's just my wrist is too messed up for it. So I'm like, oh, yay, button controls. And they're just as bad. Kind of had this realization as I was playing the game, like, oh, yeah, of course, like it controls like garbage. It was designed from the ground up to control like garbage on the crappy Wii Motion Plus. Which never, again, it's just never worked properly for me. Like, all power to you if it worked for you, but it never worked for me. So, yeah, everything has like a really weird cadence. The movement is very stilted. Just the whole world is designed around this control scheme. You never have full control over the camera, really. Like, there's just a lot of limitations on it. And the first area of the game, I think, is genuinely awful. I think it's like a really terrible introduction area to the game. It does get better and I've powered through and I've actually really been enjoying it lately, like the last week or so. I kind of got through that first like forest area and it was a slog and I don't even know how I kept getting through. I was like, okay, I got to get to the time travel desert. To the time travel desert. And like the second area is way better, the sort of volcano area. And then now I'm in the time travel. I'm in the Leniru, whatever, mines, which is like the cool time travel desert, which is a lot of fun. It actually really opens up. The design of the game is very good. The level design is very good. It just has this control scheme that I'm still working with and I'm still like pushing against, but I'm enjoying the game at least at this point enough to like get me through. It was I could not have told you when I was in that stupid forest dungeon if I was going to even get past there because I thought it was so limiting. It's so tight. It's so claustrophobic. And you're just fighting this control scheme that whole time.
Yeah.
It's rough.
I just got through the forest dungeon. And it is torture. last night, I said multiple times, like, well, I don't think I'm going to finish this game because up until last night was playing it with the motion controls because I also have problems with my wrists as well.
Sure.
Last night was the first time that I started to get some pretty nasty pain on my wrist because of the game. And I was like, all right, I think I like have to just switch to the button controls. And I had tried it when they kind of first teach you how to fight in the starting area, the little tutorial section. And I tried the buttons only version, which basically makes the right thumbstick your sword. And so if you wanted to say swing from left to right, you bring the thumbstick to 9 o'clock, like all the way to the left, and then you like kind of flick it to the right, kind of like skate. If you remember that game, listener. I was like, oh no, because it wasn't really registering my movements, and but eventually I just went back to it and I've kind of been struggling with it still. And it was mostly because In that section, I wonder if this was the same with the original version that you played on with the Wii Motion Plus. But there's a moment where like there are spiders and
yes.
they drop down, ugh. And you have to like swing. Like first of all, you have to like swing once, like with both Joy-Con, and it spins the spider around, and it's kind of like on a web, obviously. So it's like on like one single strand, and it's like kind of like swinging back and forth like a pendulum, and its stomach is exposed, and you have to try to stab it. And I was like, no joke, like swinging in my living room, like punching, like I was training for something, like I was underwater doing that, like that boxing montage shot. And it wasn't, yeah, I was doing that Muhammad Ali thing and nothing was working. It just wasn't working. So it worked like once out of maybe every, and I'm not even joking, like 20, 30 tries.
What?
And then you have to like press Y to reset it. And even after doing that, it just wasn't reliable. So I switched over to the buttons only version where all you have to do is click the stick to do it. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm not going back to those motion controls. And it's such a shame because like you said, Danielle, like the game is built from the ground up with this motion control stuff in mind. And it's such a shame because like I understand from the perspective of like back then, like there are some movies you can watch and you're like, oh, I could see how this was. I mean, we just talked about Jaws, right? Yeah. On You Love to See It. And like, I was whenever you watch an old movie like that, you have to really consider like the time and the context of like, you know, this is probably the first time a movie like this had ever been seen in a movie theater or whatever. So you kind of take that into account. Yeah. And I feel the same way about Skyward Sword, where I'm like, I kind of remember, I definitely recall that era of feeling like, oh, wow, Nintendo really stumbled into something like amazing here. This is definitely the future. Like there was like this moment
yeah.
in that weird space where like everybody was, was this before the housing crash? Was that
oh my
before?
God, this would have been like around that time. I was playing Wii games. I remember absolutely like the night I heard about, because I remember I was like in my last year of grad school. And I was like, oh, fuck my loans. And it was like, I was like playing a Wii game and like watching the news in the same night. So it was right around that time. Right around
yeah,
there.
I,
yeah.
I only bring it up because I feel like there was this like few year period of like we're going to live forever. Like everything is going to be great. And I felt that way about like motion controls. And I think a lot of folks did. And I mean, enough to, especially at Xbox, make like, you know, the Kinect, and then the PS3 had the gyroscope thing inside its controllers. So I remember this feeling like revolutionary, because it still does feel kind of cool when you have to like, I mean, Link moves the sword, you know, pretty much in real time, one to one with the way you move the sword. There are times where you have to literally like point it up to like get some special power by pointing it towards the sky. Yeah. And it still feels kind of neat, but it just doesn't work. Yeah. And like, it's such a shame because this reminds, so I got my introduction to the Zelda series by way of Ocarina of Time. So that was my first Zelda that I'd ever played. So I, to me, Zelda games, and this is going to be blasphemy for a lot of people, but they've always been the 3D Zeldas. They've always been like the dungeons and like the having to like look around the world and like see things from different perspectives. And this has a lot of those. I mean, even down to the way you go from room to room and have to like look at the map for the dungeons and stuff, it has a lot of that old flavor in here. But with the really abysmal controls, but it is kind of cool to see that connective tissue between this game and what would eventually become, I don't even think it's an argument, like one of the greatest games of all time, Breath of the Wild. Because you're like, oh, okay, they definitely learned to not build the whole game around it. And some of the stuff is optional. You don't have to aim with the motion controls or whatever. I did in Breath of the Wild because I thought it was just a little easier to get that minute. Even then, it's like you can almost use it just to get the minute movement in, and you can still use the stick or whatever to aim. But yeah, I say all that to say, I'm happy to hear that you say it gets better after this, because I was legitimately like, I don't know if I want to keep going. Like, I think I'm done, because the boss fight at the end of the forest dungeon with motion controls was a nightmare.
Oh,
actually,
Lord.
I had to switch it back to motion controls
because
I couldn't do it with the thumbstick. I just couldn't do it. I was like, so I'm trying to swing, right? Like, I'm trying to swing from bottom right to top left diagonally. And I was moving the stick around, but Link over here on my screen is like Harlem shaking, like not doing anything. He's just like moving around, like just dancing. And then finally I'd swing and land a hit. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know if I could do this, but I'm Wait, happy to hear that it gets better.
So you're just like locked into this control screen scheme?
You can switch on the fly, like in the options, but you have to like, but if you, so I forgot to mention this. If you switch over to buttons only, you have to hold, L to like move the camera around, which takes a little bit of getting used to, but you kind of lose control of the camera because, well, at least in combat, because you're using the stick to swing the sword around. Right. So it's like,
yeah.
I saw a headline going around. Apologies if I forget who wrote this or what, where it showed up, but about how this game deserved a remake, not a remaster.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I couldn't agree more. I feel like this, it's such a shame that it didn't get like the proper from the ground up remake, because like Danielle, you'd mentioned before on a previous episode of Channel F, the dungeons, I mean, the forest dungeon, it does feel cramped and pretty boring, but like the world outside of it and like all the other stuff felt kind of cool. Yeah. And like the characters were interesting. So there's a lot to love about this game, but it's like, it really, really is testing my patience.
I actually had the same experience as you with Zelda. Like my first Zelda was also Ocarina of Time. So I live for this shit. Like I love that Majora's Mask and Wind Waker were my absolute favorites before like Breath of the Wild, which is also like one of the best things. You just think about it, how expressive the control scheme is in Breath of the Wild, how much it feels like playing a platformer, especially compared to this where it's so stilted and so choppy. I even like, I wrote a little piece just comparing like the movement in this game to Wind Waker, which came out so many years before it. And like, it's not perfect or anything. Like it's not as expressive as Breath of the Wild, but like it feels nice. Like it actually feels nice to play. Like Link feels responsive in a way. And it was just like, they could have just taken like the Wind Waker engine or whatever, you know, like I'm sure they have that in a box somewhere. It's Nintendo, right? There's a box somewhere with
push a button.
If they could just like rebuild the dungeons with that movement.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot of work. I'm not trying to, you know, be flippant and say, oh, that's nothing. Like, it's just like, if they could have put those resources towards it, this game deserves that because it really is a well-designed game. Outside of this like really confusing and crappy kind of just not very responsive control scheme. That's just what I kind of keep coming up to is just, it's not responsive in the right way. Like it's weird and finicky, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's so crucial to the experience of like moving forward. And it's just like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It often just feels like you're trying to drive a car with like blocks for tires. It's like, well, I want to go there, but I can't because I'm flooring it. Clearly, I'm punching at the screen, but nothing's happening.
Yeah,
That's heartbreaking.
It's a little heartbreaking. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, it's even hard for me to recommend this game because I'm like, I think I don't know if you really are that interested. I'd say maybe go watch a playthrough of it, like a Let's Play, and kind of, you know, do something else, or like so that way. I don't know. But
So what's the over under on you finishing this?
Oh, my God. I'm going to be honest. If the boss fights continue to play out the way they did at the forest dungeon, I'm going to give this game a week. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to give it the old college try. I'll give it a week. Once a night, I'll just try and play it. But if next week's episode, if I'll let you know, if I'm gonna keep going, but we'll keep checking in.
Does Nintendo ever like address stuff like this? No, right? Like they're just like, fuck off.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I don't think so. I feel like it's such a shame because, I feel kind of like an idiot. I'll be honest. Cause I bought the Mario, like the 3-pack Mario game that came out, I think over the summer or I forget when it was, but I bought this. I mean, I loved Wind Waker HD. That was my first time actually playing it all the way through. I'd watched my brother play a little bit of it back on the GameCube, but I feel like I should have known better. You know, I feel like This happens to me every time, and this doesn't even, it's not even the same thing, because with Monster Hunter, that's like my failing. I just don't have the kind of appetite for those kind of experiences long term. So that's like on me, like, you dummy, why did you buy it? Like, you know, why did you do this to yourself? But with Skyward Sword, I was like, oh, I hadn't played this one, and maybe they fixed it, you know, like maybe they, because I in Wind Waker HD, for example, and they kind of do something similar here, to my understanding, at least if I'm not mistaken, but like they made some of the sailing easier to deal with in Wind Waker HD. And is that the case with the flying as well, Danielle? Do you know?
I'm doing okay with the flying so far, at least. And again, I'm in like the third main dungeon of the game, so I'm not that far in. The main thing that they changed, other than allowing you to do buttons, is that wildly, this game used to be even worse with the dialogue. Like, you used to not be able to skip like any dialogue, and at least now you can kind of like button through it. So they did, they at least listened to like one criticism, I guess, of this game, which is all right, you know, that's good at least.
Yeah, you tried Nintendo.
It just doesn't feel like enough, you know.
Yeah,
and I feel like an idiot, because like Nintendo always gets me when it comes to this kind of stuff, and when am I ever going to learn?
Well, I feel like I guess, with Wind Waker, they did such a good job. Like, Wind Waker is already a really good game. Like, I could play Wind Waker on GameCube right now, and it wouldn't feel, you know, there'd be some outdated elements, sure, but it wouldn't feel like stodgy and awful. And HD really, really, it addressed kind of like the two main things that were even an issue at all. And it was like, oh, nip and tuck here. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Not a huge problem. Okay, make it, you know, you're making it better. I have some sympathy for what a huge job this would have been, because it was designed around this control scheme. And it actually made me go back and appreciate Twilight Princess a little bit more, which I don't think is a perfect game. I think that's a really bloated game. There's just too much stuff in there. Mm. But if you go back now after playing Skyward Sword, you can see that the motion control stuff is like so simplistic and basic that it was just like they knew how broken it was. So there's like ways around it almost. And that HD remake was pretty good too. Like, I think they did some nip and tuck kind of stuff with that as well. So, it's a hard one.
Yeah. Cam, what have you been playing that's been kind of tough to handle?
Speaking of Nintendo, I've been, Pokemon has like taken over my household. So this all started when Pokemon Unite came out. My girlfriend decided to dust off her Switch. She's not a video game player. Like, she's very casual. She'll pick it up when we're playing like Mario Party, or if we're playing I don't know, very like simple things. Like, she doesn't really just pick up and play. But her friends got Pokemon Unite, and so she's been like really into that. And I'm like, this is wild that you're playing a MOBA right now after not playing any video games. Like, this is the craziest thing ever, right?
Just right into the deep
and
end.
She's like always playing it. Like, so we work from home, and she works in the little office we have, and I can hear her clicking away during work, and I'll just like kind of put my head in, and I'm like, what is going on in here? So she's like really into that. So now that unlocked more Pokemon stuff, so now she's like, all right, I'm gonna download the newest Pokemon, like traditional game, because she used to play those back on Game Boy when we were kids. So she got Pokemon Sword, and I was like, oh, this is really freaking cool, because like, you're a full-on gamer right now. Like, she's like geeking out, showing me all the like new improvements since she played. Like, she hasn't played Pokemon since like Red, or, you know, Red and Blue.
Oh, wow.
So she's like, oh my God, we've been living in squalor.
Like, color now? Yeah.
You can run around and like see the Pokemon before you fight them. Like, all your Pokemon get all this XP.
You can pet them.
It, so she's having a blast with that stuff. And I love it, because I can like share in that, right? Like, when we talk about video games, she'll ask like, oh, what'd you talk about on the show? And I'm like, no, you're not going to know what the hell I'm talking about. Like, you don't care, really. You're just being really nice. Oh. I love you, but you don't give a shit about what I'm into. So Yeah, so she's been really into that. So, like, as that's going on, I'm like, damn, should I get back into Sword and Shield? So I kind of, like, booted it up, like, a couple days ago to see where I was. And she, like, blew past me. She's been playing for, like, she has, like, 20-something hours clocked already. And she just started this week, which is incredible. I love it because it's, like, good for me to, like, tease her for that stuff. So we've kind of been playing Sword and Shield side by side. I've been playing other things, so I don't play it often, but I've been playing that back and forth. And then for me, this summer, like, well, during the pandemic, I kind of started playing trading card games again. Thanks to Paul, I was able to get into Magic the Gathering.
Hey, nice. You know what? Honestly, I got to give credit where credit's due. Shout out to Joshua Rivera because he gave me a bunch of Magic cards. And I was like, he was like, you want these? I was like, all right, I'll take them. They were in my desk for months. And then you were like, I kind of want to play Magic. And I was like, oh, guess what?
Paul hooked it up with like so many booster packs. So I was like really into that for a while. And it was just getting hard because I had no one to play with. And that's like the worst way to learn is to like learn through YouTube and like kind of simulating what it would be like to play against somebody. The best way to learn these games is to play with somebody in real life and them teach you the ropes and stuff. So I had a really hard time with that. So that changed it to me being into something I'm kind of familiar with by collecting Pokemon cards. And nice. So I've been doing that for like the last couple months. Like here and there, I'll buy a pack, or if I'm on Amazon, you know, I'll just grab a pack, like put it in my cart as a treat, whatever. And it turned into me less about the trading card game and just more about the pretty pictures on the card. So now I'm just collecting cards. Like, it's incredible. Whoa. Like, I just love the images. I feel like a child, like, just like looking at the pretty colors and like showing my girlfriend, like, look at this one. It's called Sandy Bowl or Clobopus. Like, I'm literally, she's just like staring at me like, what the hell? But now, since like, we're all playing Pokemon, about? She's really into it. Yeah, it's great. It's like full circle. I'm like, yes, my household is complete. It feels great to like have this kind of connection and like get over those hurdles of, you know, what doesn't work for you, right? Like the trading card game ultimately was never really going to work for me. Like I had nobody to play with. Like I know I'm not going to go to the local hobby shop and get into a, you know, a league or whatever. I'm just not that guy.
You're not that guy.
You're not that guy. Yeah. So just this little like entry kind of surface level, you know, interaction with it is working for me. So that along with the video game stuff has been phenomenal for the last like week and a half. It's really, really cool. Yeah, I love geeking out about cards and they're pretty colors. Right now I have them all on my desk, so I'm like flipping.
I was picturing it. I was seriously picturing you like sitting there, like looking at a couple of them, being like, "All right, I got a good example here."
And I have like a routine. Like I do it. Like I you know go through the pack one by one, and then the last card is always like the rare card, and I like freak out, and I immediately put it back into the immediately put it back into like the little sleeve, and then I run into the room, show my girlfriend. I'm like, look at this one.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that's been my experience. It's great. If you want to get back into, like, if you want to feel nostalgic, get back into Pokemon. It's really good.
Yeah.
And that's it brings everybody together.
Yeah. I mean, like, I also kind of miss the, like, I got into just regular kind of tabletop games over lockdown as well. Like I played a lot of Clubhouse games, but yes. I could never really get into like deck building games because I just don't think I have the brain for it. But I always love like watching people play it regardless. Like it's still fun to like watch people like get animated over it in the same way that you kind of like, even if I don't understand Guilty Gear, I could still like see people get hyped over like certain maneuvers or whatever. I still think it's cool to like, but even, yeah, but it's also cool to see like, you appreciating all of the actual like artistic details that go into those cards.
Cause I also cause find nice. It. Yeah, they are. I also find it really impressive that like the the design of the video games have been exactly the same. Like there really is nothing new to learn about the games, which is incredible for someone who hasn't played in over 20 years. Yeah. I just thought that was really interesting. Like she was like, she just can pick it up and start playing. Yeah, it's just really dope. Like, way to go, Nintendo.
Good job.
Did one thing well. Yeah. Good job, Game Freak, as well.
Yeah, Game Freak.
Good job, y'all. So, yeah, I'm going to quickly go over mine because I'm not going to have a lot to say about my second pick of the week, which is, I forgot to mention on last week's episode, but a couple weekends ago, I got to check out the MoMA's new Automania exhibit, which is a really, really cool exhibit if you happen to be in New York. It's basically, there's a lot of like really amazing like old cars there that just on display, like out in their courtyard. There's the Prost Ferrari F1 car is like in the lobby. You can just like walk around it, and I was like getting as close as I could because they have it like roped off. But I'm just like taking photos of like the side wing and like the back and like the back of it. Like I was just, you know, it's amazing. Like it's the actual car that he raced in. So that stuff is really cool. And then upstairs in the actual like main exhibit, they have like an original VW Beetle. They have a really cool exotic Jaguar. And there's a couple other cars there as well. There's like a really cool camper and there's videos playing. It's a pretty cool exhibit. It's pretty small, but I think it's worth checking out if you happen to be into that kind of stuff, even just remotely. But the interesting part of it, like towards the back, like they kind of like dedicated like a wall or two, you know, off in the corner. That was these sort of like other artistic pieces that were either photographs or paintings that kind of grapple or challenge our love affairs with cars. And I talked about it in a couple episodes ago, but like kind of made me think about my own sort of like relationship with this stuff and you know, how much, as much as I love them as these like engineering marvels, the sort of damage that they've done to like, you know, infrastructure and the planet and shit. Yeah. Like it is kind of cool that that's also there as this kind of reminder of like, I mean, I also have gotten into like Top Gear recently, like old episodes of Top Gear, even though I had to skip several seasons because I'm sorry if there are Top Gear fans in the audience, but like the old British dudes weren't doing it for me as much. Like they're just like, one of them in particular, he just kind of like, that the older seasons are problematic for other reasons. Yeah. You just be kind of casually watching it and then they'll bring up a joke that you're like, ooh, okay, that's weird. I don't know why I had to go there. But, you know, they're kind of one of the hosts, the general stance was sort of being very like, you know, skeptical of like electric as the future and all this kind of stuff. They were very much like, yeah, I know, like gas and stuff, which is very weird. But yeah, it's just interesting. It's just an interesting exhibit that like had some really great stuff on display, but also, you know, kind of reminds you that like, yeah, like shit's got to change because we're all going to die. But speaking of like a more positive future, Danielle, what do you got for us this week?
Yeah, it's sort of a companion piece for something I might mention later, but I've been watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine sort of obsessively lately. And I've also been during the whole pandemic, this is really nerdy. I'm so sorry. I've like, you brought me on the podcast and here I am and I'm the biggest nerd you've ever met. But I have every Thursday night, I met a group of friends, actually. It was sort of like a friend of a friend made the introduction and I joined this group and I became like one of the queen nerds there. We watch a Star Trek episode every Thursday night from any of the series, just anything that's on Netflix. So just none of the brand new series, basically, but everything else that's on Netflix, which is all the 90s ones, you know, and the original series, of course. And we discuss it. We talk about it. We have like a Star Trek discussion group. I know. Whoa. I'm getting a wedgie right now. I can already feel it. Like, somebody just stole my lunch money. What happened?
Oh my God.
But it's really good. It's really so lovely. And so I've been revisiting The Next Generation as well. And like coming back to it, I grew up watching a lot of Star Trek. So, you know, it's something I always watched with my family. It was always something that was really nice for me. And I've gone through and like watched pretty much all the series like a couple of times, like every few years I'll revisit that kind of thing. And Deep Space Nine is like, I don't know if anything's ever going to top it in terms of Trek. And for most shows I've ever seen, it's just, it's so good and it hits different. And it really is a very emotionally honest show that goes into things like war, even in like a future where humans are really nice to each other, like conflicts still arise. And it's interesting to see how they deal with all sorts of stuff. Next Generation is the more like, it's the one that feels more dated at this point. I will say that. And I love the characters so much and I love the sets and I love all the designs and I love so many of the really good episodes of it, but it does have, with a few exceptions, it does kind of wrap things up really neatly all the time. And that is both really lovely. If it's like, oh, I just want to, you know, I just want to have a nice hour of my life where things wrap up neatly and things are nice and things are pretty. But it does leave you, at least me at this point, you know, in my life, in my late 30s, I guess I've become an old woman. But like, it does leave me wanting a little bit more sometimes from it because it promises this beautiful future. And it promises that like, oh, people are capable of this. Human beings are capable of a better future. We're capable of a future without greed and all this kind of stuff. Then it just, Deep Space Nine just takes things a lot further. So I've been kind of watching both of them and really enjoying both, but really, really kind of like, yeah, Deep Space Nine is the shit. Like it really is so good and so well done and has aged better, I think, at this point in time.
Is that a good entry point?
So genuinely, all of them are a little different. There's like a semi-continuity, but you don't really need to worry about it too much. I think Deep Space Nine is the best Trek there is, and so I think it's a perfectly fine entry point. All Star Treks, their first season is kind of garbage. And like Deep Space Nine, I think, kind of gets over the hump a little faster than most, but there's a lot of crappy episodes at first. It really is like a TV show from 1993, and there are ways in which that absolutely shows. But if you like find a good skip list and kind of stick with it through some of the rough early stuff, I think it's like unimpeachable for what it was, especially at the time, and for how it has aged, I think, pretty gracefully in most ways. I think it's fantastic. Also, you could basically watch any random episode of The Next Generation and it'll like make sense because that was a completely non-serialized show. That was just like completely episodic. You could pick them from any season. It'll make sense. So like whatever you're in the mood for, I would say Deep Space Nine is more of a ride. It does get fairly serialized by the end. So yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I've tried watching a couple of Star Treks here and there. I started watching the newer one, Discovery.
Yeah.
And yeah. I kind of fell off, but I've been meaning to like maybe jump back in. Knowing that like skip lists exist are great because I am a big fan of saving time.
Yep. So,
yeah, this is cool. This is cool. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Great pick. Thank you. All right, cool. Let's answer a couple questions before we wrap up the show. All right, if you have any questions for us, please feel free to throw them into our questions channel in the optional Discord. If you're also in the Fanbyte Discord, there's a room for questions in there as well. You can also send an email over to podcasts@fanbyte.com and make sure you put optional in the subject line so I can catch it. And continuing our voicemail tradition, you can also call and leave a voicemail at 424-426-3799 so we can hear those lovely voices on the show. It's also, if you can't remember, it's 424 Gamers with two Z's, which is one Nikki Grayson original. So thank you for that. We did get a voicemail this week from Danny.
Nice.
I'm just going to go ahead and play it right here.
Hey, Paul and Cam. This is Danny from the Discord. So good to hear you guys back in the podcast feed. Congrats on reviving the show. My question for you guys this week is, what is a sort of facet of gaming culture, which is a gross phrase to say, that you have always wanted to get into but never did, whether it's for time, because of time commitments, because you know you're like intimidated by it. You know how like a lot of people will say, oh, I think fighting games are super cool, but I'm like scared to try them, or it seems like a lot of work. What's your guys' version of that, if anything? All right, thanks, and congrats again.
It's a really good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. Danielle, since you're our guest, why don't you go first?
Sure. Yeah. I know mine's going to be a little bit similar to Cam's answer too, but to put a spin on it, kind of role-playing in general, like role-playing games in general, not just RPGs, mm-hmm. but like, you know, live like role-play things. I've always thought that sounds yeah. really fun. I've heard of like, you know, I know there's like the funny LARP stuff, but I've also heard of like camps where you go and you actually like play a role for a weekend. You do this whole thing. And I'm like, that sounds really fun. Like, I know, yeah. nerd out, but like, that sounds really fun. But I don't know if I'm ever going to actually be able to like justify to myself, like, oh my God, that much money to like do this thing that I've never done before. Oh. And it goes to this circular thing where I'm like, would it be a waste of money? Would it be like, if I don't like it? So I'm always like, I don't know. That and like role-playing podcasts, like good role-playing podcasts. I've always wanted to get into something where, you know, there's a story and there's a GM and there's like all these characters and all these roles. It sounds awesome. And I've just never been able yeah. to get really into anything. So one day I'm sure I'll actually sit down and get into something and fully give it a chance, but I've never been able to make that jump just yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. I feel like, I mean, Cam, we've talked about, you have way more experience with the tabletop role-playing mm-hmm. game genre than I do. I've only done it like once or twice. And it wasn't for like D&D or anything. Cause I'm a big baby and I'm dumb. And I don't know if I could do all that number math, all those maths or whatever. But yeah, I could never really get into that either. I also kind of feel the same way about RPGs, like especially like sure, RPGs. Sure. Like I have only completed, I think, two or three in my life. I think maybe even just two. And I've tried playing them, but they're just, I guess, I didn't grow up with that mm. in my life. So I got Final Fantasy VIII when I was 10 years old, sure. I think, and didn't know what I was doing even with the strategy guide. So there was just like a lot of, kind of like Cam was saying before, I didn't have someone to kind of show me the ropes with a lot of the stuff. So a lot of it feels foreign to me. And I don't know if at this point in my life, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I want to think I'll get into something like that someday. But Cam, do you have any like advice for us to
get into this? I'm sure, like, especially with your respective audiences, like if you put out the call, if you really wanted to do it, if you put out the call, people would gladly roll out the carpet and like ease you into it. But like I had a friend group that I used to work with, and we would do D&D every weekend, and that was like the greatest because I had never done anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of always felt silly, at least the way it was like portrayed on like TV and stuff. It always felt like the deep end of the nerd pool. It was just like, once you're in there, it's like, you got to learn how to do it, you know?
You mean like a weekly gathering of people who are all into the very same thing? Like, I don't know, like Star Trek.
Or, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And it, like, once you kind of like let yourself be silly and like just go for it, you like, it just becomes the best thing ever. And especially if you have friends who are like, want you to be there and want you to get into it, they'll, you don't need to know math. Like they'll do all that stuff for you. Like,
oh, great.
That's comforting, yeah. honestly.
It really is yeah. really cool. I'd like at least do it, you know, a couple times with people you trust and you'll love it. Nice. I definitely want to do it with you, Paul. Like that would be really fun.
Yeah.
Cause I know you like to hand it up. You got good voices.
I'm so down. Totally down too. I've yeah. only done it once in my life and it was on camera and I hadn't slept for like 4 days. So like,
honestly, wow, perfect.
Yeah, during the waypoint 72, that was the only time I've ever done anything like this. So I'm like, I know I liked it, but I,
I would totally, I would love to do that. Like I'm not good at like DMing or anything. Cause I'm not like imaginative in the way of building a world and, you know, keeping track of all that stuff. Like I'd like to just play my role and that's it. But
yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're just like, can I do this? Can I do that? Yeah. Can I try this? Which is something that I had a hard time. Cause I had a buddy or I have a buddy, shout out to Ryan, who designed a game called Flip Tales. And when he was first designing it, but we used to work together. He did a little play session and I was like so bad at it. Cause I had never done it before. And I'd never, you know, I'm not like an improv kind of guy, you know, like, oh, I'll throw, you can't say no. All right. Let's go. I'm a pizza. I'm making a pizza. Right. I just can't do that. You know what I mean? So, you should have seen me. There was a lot of hand movements. I was hardly shaking. So I'm not like, but it's, I just don't have that kind of like performative side of me, yeah. but I think I could try to discover it, but I would have to be with people that I like, you know, feel yeah. comfortable around. And I think that's one of the things is like, as much as I would appreciate people being like, hey, come to my weekly gathering with 12 people you don't know. Right. Right. That's like a nightmare to me. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to roll through Zooted. I hope you're ready yeah, right. to just be asleep the whole time. Yeah, Cam, what's yours?
Yeah, something I always wanted to get into is like, you know, very similar to what we were just talking about, but specifically the GTA role-playing community. And they have like, basically it's like, they have all these servers on a modded version of GTA where people can just like assume a role, like they can be a cop or a criminal or a newscaster or anything in between, right? And I've seen, like, I've watched streams on Twitch of like, people playing, and it seems really, really fun because it's in that same vein, right? Like, I think it's probably a little easier to get into because you're behind a screen. You like, you don't have you don't have to show your face, and you don't really have to, you know, worry about that part of the anxiety. So I think it would be really cool to do because you can just kind of ham it up behind the scenes. But the thing that's always kept me away from it is that fact that like the anonymity of it. Like, people show their whole ass. I've ran into a bunch of streams where I was like, oh, this person's really cool. They're really good at it. And then out of nowhere, they're doing, like, this really bad imitation of, you know, a stereotype, stereotypical ethnic person. And it's just like, fuck. Like, yeah, let me delete that from my history because that was terrible. But, yeah, so, like, you get that a lot. I'm not saying it's all like that, but that's definitely something that's kept me like at arm's length.
That seems fair. That seems like a very fair thing to not want to deal with.
It looks like really cool. Like if I can get like 100 people that I like, you know, mutuals and stuff like that into a room, I think that would be really cool. But
yeah. This is a good one. I only ever see it show up on my like TikTok feed and it's like, it's like one of two things. It's like, hey, look at this cool racing clip because my feed is now also consumed by motorsports clips.
Yeah.
But, or it's like people role playing as like gangs. And I think that's so funny because it's like, to me, that's kind of shit is terrifying. Like, you know, as someone who fucking grew up around that, I'm like, that's what you want to do for fun? Right. Like, that's escapism to you?
It's the same thing when like, you know, the first thing people do in these games is become a cop, and it's just nuts to me. I'm like, why would you do that? You could do anything.
Why? You could do anything.
And they're like pulling old people, giving them tickets and shit. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, bro.
They probably love being hall monitors.
Yeah.
They were the first one to volunteer. I mean, mine is sort of similar. Kind of like very similar themes here, but I put live service games, as I call them now, since I've decided on last week's Channel F, live Segas, MMOs. I just like, I've always kind of gone into like the shallow end, but I never really dove into the deep end. And I kind of alluded to it earlier, but I think it's mostly because I just don't have the kind of brain for that kind of thing. And just like the time, like the sort of the time investment, I just don't have it. Like, it's weird because I'll play hundreds of hours of, you know, driving sims now and racing sims and Tetris and stuff like that. But MMOs and I think that constant need, or at least that sort of pressure to stay up to date, is something that doesn't really gel well with how I approach games, I think, in general, like as this sort of like decompressing thing. I just don't want, I just have a hard time with playing games that are like, we've mentioned this before, but games that are, that kind of want you to become, they want you to treat them like this part-time job. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I just have a hard time getting into it. Even though I experienced that real FOMO of like, I mean, I literally, this week, I say this and I'm a hypocrite. I'm a huge hypocrite because I downloaded Warframe after hearing Merritt and Steven talk about it on Channel F. And I was like, oh, this sounds pretty tight. I'm gonna check Warframe's this out. Tight. Oh, Cam, why would you say that?
Well, because like, I have friends that were playing, and then we were playing at the same time. And then I like missed a day and they were like levels, but like ahead
that's
of me.
That's the thing.
And I was just like, man, this is not fun anymore. Like,
yeah. So that's the other part of it too. Yeah. That's the other part of it too, is like I gotta have like a group to do it with, yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Did you have any other ones in mind?
Like service games?
Yeah, like MMOs or anything. Because the one I always see that like mutuals are playing is the Final Fantasy one, and that I was like, damn, I want to make a character so bad.
I mean, shout out to 99 Potions, shout out to the 99 Potions crew. But yeah, I played it for like a month, for like that month trial. Me and my partner, we played it, and like she had played it on my PS4 at the time, and I was playing on my PC like in the other room. And we were like trying to like get to the level where we could see each other, and then like for whatever reason we just kind of fell off of it. But I don't know if I could see myself getting into that game, to be quite honest. I'm sorry to the 99 Potions crew, but I don't know.
It's not your shtick.
Yeah, I get it, but maybe not for me.
Not your bag.
Not my bag. Okay. Last question. We can do this really quickly. Erisic Lowlander from the Discord asks, what is a good question to ask someone interviewing for a position that will be your team's supervisor? So this is such a good question because I've never really been anybody's supervisor, but Danielle, since you're our fearless leader here, what would you ask?
Yeah, absolutely. My biggest thing with any hire, whether they're going to be in charge of me or not, or in charge of other people or not, is how do you deal with bad shit? I know how basic that sounds. It really does sound basic, but a lot of times in an interview, I will ask people like, okay, what does your best day look like? And then what does your worst day look like? And how do you deal with it? And it's so important to me. I do this spiel a lot, and I will do a very, very reduced version of it. But media is terrible. Media is a bad place to work a lot of the time, and it's not great. And a lot of people carry like media trauma, like for real, and have a lot of really unhealthy workplace habits and all sorts of stuff just because they were treated really, really, really badly by other people in this industry. So I'm like really, really careful about hiring folks and just hiring folks that I think are going to be genuinely like team players, honestly, and also people who will enjoy working with other people and be good to work with. So I always ask people like, what is your worst day? How do you deal with it? How do you deal with a person having their worst day? Like a person's having like a rough time, whether it's at home or, and it's like leaking into the job or something is going wrong. How do you fix the problem? How do you deal with it? It's so easy to ask people about like, oh, your ambitions and, oh, where do you want to be in 5 years? And, oh, if things are going well, how does that look? Like, yeah, great. That's awesome. That's sunshine and rainbows. But how do you deal with stuff when it's really awful? How do you deal with stuff when you're frustrated, when you're having a problem, when you're not having your best day? Like, first and foremost, how do you deal with stuff? And if communication and like open communication and genuine like sympathy for other people doesn't come up in like the first minute, I'll be like, all right, thank you very much. We'll be in touch. And I don't want to work with that person.
Yeah. So
that's probably a long-winded answer, but it's honestly really basic stuff, but it's very, very important, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. I mean, yeah, I have also been kind of learning to get over and unlearn a lot of those really bad habits I picked up these last few years. And I have never really been in a position to supervise anyone, but as someone who does work with a lot of folks and has to sort of communicate and coordinate things between multiple departments and disciplines.
Time zones, of course.
Time zones, yeah. That's been extremely challenging, actually, I'll be honest. But for me, like I 100% what you said, I feel like at the end of the day, I always have to even remind myself, like some people might just be currently going through it. You can't lose sight of that human aspect of like, and I have to check myself sometimes too. Cause I like am a bit of a workaholic. I'll admit I kind of push myself pretty hard. That's just like the environments I've been in the past, again, really bad habits and the way I was taught, especially like in film school, like, you know, we were taught if you're on time, you're late.
Oh, God.
That thing. If you're early, you're on time. And if you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, you're fired. Oh, like, that was like the thing that we used to say. And it was like all that kind of that bullshit. But I've been also trying to unlearn a lot of that, like putting those expectations on myself and also like on others unfairly. And I would kind of ask the same thing. That's a great question of like, how do you deal when stuff gets real? Because it inevitably will. Cam, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've led a bunch of teams over the last few gigs, especially in my last one. I worked at a tech startup, and that was brutal, right? Like, it's a lot of work, and you're just always scrappy, and you're dealing with a lot of frustrated people. So one thing I always, you know, ask for my supervisors, and also is like, what do you expect from me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you, very, you know, bottom line, like, what do you expect from me? Is it communication? Is it hard work? Like, where do we start with that? And I think we need to keep that question open at all times, right? Like, I want my team to trust me and, you know, be able to ask me, like, what do you expect from us right now? Like, you know, so I always start with that, especially when we're talking to people who are like leading teams, like, what do you expect from the people under you? And is it like reasonable?
And also just like allowing that space for everyone to be happy and healthy and have that time to work from a good place, right?
Yeah.
And not just be continuously
burned out. I think the idea of like leaders and management, it gets kind of misconstrued because like the managers work for you, right? Like they work for the people who are under them to make sure that jobs are easier and stuff. And I think that gets lost often, especially in like a traditional line of work. So just bringing that back to the forefront, like, yo, I'm here for y'all. So this is what we're doing.
Yeah. And meaning that, and like really meaning that, and being like, yeah, I'm here for you. Like I am available to you, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We here for you. That's a little joke for my secession fans. All right. So Danielle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. This is, I could go another 4 hours. I mean, obviously I would be like asleep probably. But I really do mean it. Like this has been so much fun. I could talk to you guys forever. So anytime if you ever want another Bushwick friend, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
We should go get some pizza.
Totally down if you guys want to do
get
some
a slice.
I would love that. That would be amazing. A slice and some cold brew, maybe? I don't know.
Oh,
I like. Oh, it's a weird combo, but it's good. What? It's good. Yeah, it's
that sounds great. Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Where can the folks find you online, Danielle?
Absolutely. Well, of course, fanbyte.com. That's, you know, where I live. I wanted to say where I live, and actually, I guess it is kind of where I live. So, yeah, that's fanbyte.com. And, of course, I am on Twitter at DanielleRI. I put all my grappling pictures and stuff on there. So you can see me in my little gold medal that I may or may not be sleeping in for the next weekend.
Let's go. You gotta just wear that to the trip. I gotta see you wearing that the whole trip.
I might like bring it with me. Staff. You know, just again, you guys want to see it. Like,
any chance you can get to be like, that kind of reminds me of when I won my gold medal. You see, you don't know this, but the secret to success is. I'm going to be the shameless plug person here, but please go listen to You'd Love to See It. We just started.
Yeah.
Creature Feature Month, or as I like to call it, What is the Weakness Month? We're watching scary monster movies. We just did Jaws, which I watched for the first time today. Good movie, turns out. That's Steven Spielberg. Kind of knows what he's doing. Check that out. It's great. Also, listen to Channel F, which Danielle is also on.
It's my podcast, babies. Very proud of them. I mean, they're really yours. You actually produced them. I just show up, you know, have some notes where I scribbled what happened in a movie. So, you know,
I'm like the mechanic. I'm there to make sure it's running well. And
it might be
drive
alternator.
The car. Yeah. It's probably, might be the alternator. Cam, where can people find you?
You can catch me on socials at Cappy Can't Lose, CappyCantlose.
Nice. You can find me at Polymayo, PolyM as in Mario, AYO. And thank you so much for listening this week. If you have any questions and or comments, please send them over to podcasts@fanbyte.com. New email alert. We'd love to hear from you. You can also send us questions and talk to us and our amazing community on Discord. You can find a link to that in our show notes, as well as to the Fanbyte Discord. let's get some crossover happening. I want to see some like I want that gif of like the Ninja Turtles and the Power Rangers meeting for the first time. Like that's what I want to see happen on the Discord side.
Absolutely.
So yeah, please make sure to subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Anchor, and Spotify. We're also pretty much on everything. If you could take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, yes, that would really, really help us out. It really does help.
Five stars, five words. That's all we need.
Please, please. As always, we are The Optional NYC on Twitter. You can find Fanbyte over at Fanbyte Media. You can find the rest of our podcasts that me and Jordan Mallory produce over at fanbyte.com/podcasts or podcastnet.work if you're nasty this week. I already mentioned a couple of podcasts, but oh, I forgot to mention I'm going to be on Volume Slider.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, or I was on Volume Slider. If you're listening to this on Monday, I was on Volume Slider on Friday, which shout out to Jay for producing that wonderful, wonderful show where I talked probably a little too long about Streets of Rage and
No such thing.
That's impossible. So go check it out on Spotify if you can. It's optimized for that. So yeah, and be sure to check out our streams over at... Oh, hold on. You can follow Jay, who's helping us here on the podcast side, at Mama Jay. That's MOMMAJAAE on Twitter. And check out our streams over at twitch.tv/fanbyte. And to keep up with all of our amazing guides, news, trending pieces, and more, over at fanbyte.com as well. So until next time, everyone.
Peace.
Peace.
Channel F is a video game podcast covering today's hits, yesterday's classics, and everything in between. Join us, the staff of fanbyte.com, as we discuss what we're playing, dig up weird finds at thrift stores, and take your questions. We guarantee that listening to Channel F will make you smarter, stronger, and more successful. Proven not guaranteed. Listening to Channel F may cause gentrification.